If you have any questions that you want answered or you want to raise or ideas, you can submit them to my phone number by text. But we're ready to go. So everybody's here. So thank you all for staying locally, and thank you for being here online. I'm going to ask you to bow your heads, and we'll ask the blessing on the study. Great eternal God, the events of the future are unknown to most of mankind, but you've revealed them to your servants, the prophets. And we're very happy to study them and to be enlightened by them, and we ask you to guide and direct our study today. And we do pray for your inspiration in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, well, we're entering into a really momentous time with the next few chapters in the study of the book of Revelation. These are not necessarily time-oriented in terms of sequence, but they're inset chapters beginning in chapter 8. And by the way, I have a few handouts. If you haven't gotten them in the past, then you're welcome to check them out. I've got an outline of the seven seals, of which we are going into part of that, to the last seal at any rate, which is the trumpet plagues. And then I've got another outline which gives the story flow of the book of Revelation and the chapter outline of the book of Revelation. And chapters 8 through 10, I don't know that we'll get to chapter 10, but chapters 8 through 10 basically show the trumpet plagues, which are the time of God's intervention in the affairs of mankind, or the day of the Lord, as we would call it. The whole book really is about the day of the Lord, right? It's the prelude to the day of the Lord and leads up to that time, but this is the vision that John saw. So we'll begin in Revelation 8. And something happens here at the beginning of this chapter, which is very unusual, because unlike some of the previous chapters, chapter 7 in particular, where there's a lot of information that John discloses about being at the site of God's throne room, he's also there at the throne room of God, but it says, when he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about a half hour. That is what is unusual about this. There's dead silence. You could hear a pin drop, in other words. There's no angelic choirs. There's no praising by the angelic beings, the 24 elders, or the multitude of other angels praising God day and night, which is part of their duty. There's no singing. It indicates, some of the commentators think, and I think this is probably correct, that because of what we had just rehearsed in chapter 7 with the Great Tribulation and with the sealing of the 144,000 and the martyrdom of saints during the time of the Great Tribulation, this indicates that God has set aside time to listen to his people. Now, he obviously always listens, but this seems to be reverential. This seems to be that God is dwelling on the trauma, the difficulty, the problems of his creation, and specifically of his saints. So the full attention of God the Father and Jesus Christ is then focused on the prayers of the saints, which are mentioned. Now, God always hears our prayers, obviously, but this is a specific, direct example of how God is considering our prayers, which probably makes you want to pray even more for God's protection and for God's inspiration. And maybe I'll have some other comments about that in the day and age in which we live, but we really do need the protection of God. And I don't want to get off topic too much, but I've had some interviews this past week which indicate how far down the road I believe that we have gone in terms of our national problems and our national issues. Shocking, actually, when you combine what I heard directly from kind of a very direct source, and I've given a little tease in one of my World News and Prophecy reviews. It's something that the normal mind cannot comprehend. And what is happening right now in our nation is so terrible behind the scenes. Now, up front, you know, you're walking into your grocery store, maybe it's not going to be robbed, maybe somebody's not going to have a mass shooting or something most of the time. Maybe they are. Maybe Walmart's going to be okay and safe when you are, but maybe it's not. But things that are happening defy the imagination to the extent that most normal people just push it aside, and they push aside what could be reported because of the normalization factor that most people have in their minds, that this can't be happening. This can't be happening. And then you find out it is happening, and you still find it very hard to believe because you project your normal goodness onto other people, and you just, I mean, and that's something that we all do. It's quite normal, though. But it leads us to understand why this kind of intervention is necessary. Now, I think that for the most part, many in our society are also overwhelmed and also angered by what they see happening in this prelude to the time of great tribulation that our nation will go through. There are many people that are very, very distressed. I mean, I don't like social media. Okay, I get that out. I took myself off of Facebook, and I joined an investment club, not a club, but a seminar series, and they wanted you to get on the Facebook page, so I thought, well, I can get on, and then, you know, so then I'm all back in again, and I'm getting notifications from people all over the place. Oh, you know, somebody send you a friend request. I'm not going to answer them. I'm going to get eventually, but it's tough to get off Facebook. If any of you tried get off Facebook, it's hard. But I am on Twitter, and so I do that to just see what, to take a temperature pulse. And yeah, but basically, I hate social media. I don't like it. I love it for my wife. Not that I'm putting her in a different category, but she loves it because she can keep in contact with the rest of the family far and wide. And that is a good use of it, but that's all she uses it for. But in terms of what they can do with it to manipulate people, I don't like that, obviously. But what's happening today is so very, very difficult, but this is like a million steps ahead, what is shown here. And when God begins to intervene, it is corrective action to take care of all that we see happening in the world today. If I get a little time to comment on this other than I will. But so verse 2, I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Now, there's not a lot of documentation. There's not a lot of other follow-up scriptures about standing before God. There's a few. But it appears to me that only the righteous can stand before God, as in Revelation chapter 20, where it says in verse 11, then I saw the great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there's found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God. These are dead that were dead. They're not dead any longer, else they wouldn't be standing. They'd be in the grave, right? So these are ones, and we understand this by the keeping of the holy day, the last day, the eighth day, whatever you wish to call it is fine, but they are there before God. Their sins are forgiven. They're standing before God, even as these righteous angels can stand before God, before the Father's presence, because there cannot be any toleration of sin before God the Father, especially at his throne room. So going back to verse 2, the seven angels are there. They're righteous angels. They're standing before God, and they are each given trumpets. Now, trumpets are used to signify warnings, in this case, plagues, that are going to be poured out upon humanity. And the seventh seal is the last seal of the books, the book of Revelation, right? It's all in seals. This last seal is composed of seven trumpets, which are plagues, as we understand. So these trumpets show us the events that are leading up to the eventual return of Jesus Christ. Now, these events, you'll find if you were to take a look at the outline of the seven seals, which I prepared long ago. But you'll find that these are not found in the Olivet prophecy, like Matthew 24, Luke 21, Luke 13. They're not found there. These are additional. The Great Tribulation is found in Matthew 24, the signs prior to Christ's return. But these trumpet plagues are not found in that area. They're referred to as the seven trumpet plagues, and the seventh seal of the book of Revelation is comprised of these events. They're unbelievable. If we're to spend too much time on it, then it could make you physically ill to understand what has to happen to a deceived world when Satan is fully in control of it to gain the attention of mankind. And mankind is going to be led to such deception, to depths of depravity that are so much greater than even now when we see, okay, you can't see it. I can't see it because we're not down there. Okay, but down at our border, 60 miles away, the worst thing that used to be coming over that border was drugs, which is bad enough. The worst thing years ago would be that they would get tons of marijuana and seize it. And of course, hundreds of thousands of tons would go across unimpeded. They get probably a 10% or maybe 1%, 5% of all drugs that enter into the United States, or else we wouldn't have such a big, huge drug problem. Now it's fentanyl, which is deadly. The leading cause of death, people under 40 in the United States, is fentanyl. Of course, what do we focus on? We focus on, you know, another horrible atrocity where somebody is gunned down. You know, it's the gun that did it, right? We've got to take away your guns. One of the worst things that we know about happening in humanity 60 miles away is drugs coming across our border. That isn't even the worst thing. The worst thing is the child and the sex and the human trafficking is happening. We know about illegal immigration. By now you all do. By now you probably all should know that there are at least seven hotels in the city of Tucson that are filled every night with illegal immigrants. I'm not going to give away my article, am I? Am I going to give away my article? I met with a veteran Border Patrol agent whose name will remain anonymous. You know what the Border Patrol used to do, right? They used to patrol the border. This is going to be in the article, so you're going to advance copy here right now. The Border Patrol's job was to protect the border, protect it from illegal immigration. They see somebody, they apprehend them, they send them back to their country of origin. Okay, that's what used to happen. Do you know what the number one job of Border Patrol agents is today? They are bus drivers. If you travel Interstate 19 and Interstate 10 and you see a big white bus with no markings, chances are it's driven by a Border Patrol agent who has just gotten his CDL license, because that's what their job is now. They don't interdict and return anymore. Anybody can come. So because that's what they're doing, they're also not stopping drugs that come into the major ports of entry, down at Sasebo, down at Nogales even, all across the New Mexico border, all the way through Texas, and of course in California. It's a joke. We're at the beginning of sorrows that we haven't even begun to feel some of the ramifications, but you cannot allow millions and millions of people and drugs to come into your nation unimpeded and it not have an effect. We need God's protection. We all need to pray for one another, and that including those of you that may be up in Michigan, you're watching, you're in Illinois, you're in Maryland, you whoever you are, this is coming home to you. Because most of these people don't stay in southern Arizona. I mean, 99.9% of them are going elsewhere in the country. And who's paying it for it? We are paying for it. Pima County taxpayers are paying for it. Yeah, millions of dollars. We've got a bunch of left-wing nuts in the government here in Tucson, in the Pima County government. I don't want to get on a rant here, but it used to be when we first moved here, Pima County, the general county outside the city limits of Tucson, was conservative. Five commissioners, they're all Republicans. Now there's only one. So it's, anyway. What, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. But the problems that are being addressed in this chapter by God are a million times worse. And they're going to get a million times worse. So we've got to be ready for it. This chapter talks about God's judgment on this evil world. And it's going to get a lot more evil. Now, sorry if this offends you. Some mistakenly assume that all people everywhere need to be punished. Now, maybe that might be an overstatement. But it's a relatively few that are controlling all of this nonsense. And my gauge tells me, my barometer tells me, that most people dislike this if they know about it. Now, there are bad people everywhere. They're in prisons. They're out doing drugs, dealing drugs, maybe up and down this highway here, this street. But your neighbors are pretty good people, most of them, and they abhorrently hate what is going on in this nation if they know about it. It's the leadership that is evil and bad. Now, not everyone, obviously, but they're the ones that are causing all the problems that we have right now, the evil leaders of our nation. But eventually it'll spread and it'll get worse, and then, you know, Revelation 14 talks about the whole world being deceived and everybody buying into the message of the beast power and everything. But these chapters 8 through 11 now begin to describe what's the time known as the day of the Lord. And then in verse 3, getting back to the prayers of the saints, we have another angel having a golden censer came and stood at the altar, and he was given much incense that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. So in ancient times, in ancient Israel, you'd have the throne, you know, you'd have the Holy of Holies, you'd have the coals, you'd have incense that were placed on these coals, and it would create this sweet smell. That was representative of the prayers of the saints, and there are a lot of scriptures that you can find regarding that. But another angel having a golden censer came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense that he could offer it, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. Okay, seven seals, seven trumpets, you know. So here are a few scriptures that you can copy down and review that talk about the prayers of the saints. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 2, walk in love as Christ has also loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. And then Philippians 4 and verse 18, indeed I have all and abound, I am full, having received from Aphroditus the thing sent from you, a sweet-smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. And then back a few chapters in Revelation 5 and verse 8. Now when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each having a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. So your prayers are meaningful to God, and they are highly regarded. And boy, do we ever need those prayers from all of God's people now. But there's silence in heaven while God contemplates the people of God and their cries for help, but he's always attentive to them. But special time of silence is made as God hears the cries of his people, and some of that has to do with what took place in chapter 7. You know, you've got this incredible number, 144,000, and then, you know, the innumerable multitude that we know come out of the Great Tribulation. They're called of God out of the Great Tribulation, the time of the devil's wrath. And, you know, they're called to the house of God, to to be the part of the people of God. So a strong assurance is given here for the suffering of the people who are the followers of Christ. Their prayers are not going to be forgotten by God. There's a special effort made to make sure that we understand that God is going to vindicate them for what has happened to them. He's going to intervene. So the altar of God is close to the incense cloud of His saints, and their prayers, they rise to His presence, and they will not escape His notice. In Psalm 141 in verse 2, David said, "Let my prayer be set before you as incense, the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice." So just so you have, there's other scriptures, you can look them up, you can find a concordance, look it up on Bible Gateway or Blue Label Bible. You can find a lot of good study information in each of those online resources. Of course, my number one online resource is Bible Gateway. I do like Blue Label Bible as well, but most of it's free. I pay a $40 subscription a year for BibleGateway.com. It gives a few other things that are at least worth it to me, but anyway, that's my pitch. Not a paid spokesman or not compensated for these, but just for your own use. I think, I like the hard Bible. I like to read my Bible, but if you want a good Bible program, and this is going to sound like heresy, okay? So I'm ready for you. It's going to sound kind of like heresy in a sense, but you have to know how to use it. If you want a good Bible program, I'm going to tell you the name of it. It's completely free. You ready? Google. Oh, no, he didn't say that, did he? No, you can actually find a lot of good stuff. Now you have to, it's like sifting the wheat and the chaff, right? But you can type in a lot of into your search engine, not just Google. But again, you're going to get some nonsense too. But you can find a lot of good, just try it. You're looking for a little Bible help. Okay, verse 4 of Revelation 8. The smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the angel's hand. It's just incredible. It's spectacular that this notification is made and that we can see that God is so involved in our lives that He listens to us. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it to the earth. And there were noises and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. And this is very reminiscent of what happened at the day of Pentecost when ancient Israel was at Mount Sinai. There was all of this rumbling and thunderings and lightnings, and so this is symbolically seems to be the answer to the prayers of the saints. God is now ready to vindicate them. He's ready to engage in mankind, defeat Satan, and put away the forces of evil. So the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. Now, pardon me. What follows is nothing short of the unimaginable and the spectacular. It's pretty straightforward. But the first four trumpets of Revelation 8 show cataclysmic destruction of the entire planet. The first is very similar to the 10 plagues that God sent on Egypt, because it's like a rain of hail and fire in Revelation 8 and verse 7. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. Now, I think mankind is trying to preempt God right now with all these fires that are raging in Canada. Which, by the way, it's not because of global warming. The satellite imagery has shown that this was all purposeful. Isn't it incredible the stupidity of that man? These, in other words, all of these forest fires all across Canada, from Alberta all the way to what are some of the northeastern provinces, Quebec, they're all deliberately set. They've even got videos of the helicopters, you know, the helicopters that drop the flame retardant. No, these are helicopters dropping flames, sending flares into these forests and setting them on fire. It's truth. I mean, you can look it up. You might be blocked on some of the search engines, but this is all deliberately done. It's like California a few years ago. They blamed part of it has to do with the overgrowth and not managing the forest and everything, but is basically PNG that, you know, had a bad transformer, started all these horrible fires, but you know, they could have alleviated the problems had they had better forest management techniques. But a lot of this stuff that happens nowadays is man-made. It's deliberate. It's intended to drive people to, distraction, but it's really crazy. But all the while, the polar ice caps have never had more ice in them than they do now. They're thick ice. Here's the truth about global warming. It's basically controlled by the sun, and our proximity to the sun is basically all you need to know about the climate. Our climate is controlled by our sun, and sometimes we're a little closer, sometimes we're a little further away, and actually having a little bit of extra heat, like maybe a half degree over 5 years, is probably a good thing for the growing season. It's not a catastrophe. It's not like Al Gore has told you. And of course, if all of this climate change nuttery was actually valid, then you wouldn't have all these billionaires who are leading the charge. Yes, Clay, you got to shut down all of your combustion engines. You can't run your lawnmower anymore. You got to have electric this and that in cars and whatnot. If the oceans were going to rise, they wouldn't all be buying beachfront properties wherever they are, and they all are. New York City was supposed to be 10 feet underwater in 2010. Remember, Al Gore said that. So maybe it might be better off under 10 feet of water right now. I don't know, but it is New York City, after all. Anyway, but this is going to be a devastation that is so incredible, which will devastate the Earth's vegetation. God does a better job at it than man-made fires do. By far greater. In verse 8, then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea. Now, I don't know what this is going to be. Could this be a meteor that hits the sea? We don't know. This is what John saw, a mountain. It could be a number of different things. It could also mean a super volcano or two or three or four erupting all over the globe. So it could be a comet, could be an asteroid, we don't know, but it's going to be horrific. Moving on to verse 10, it says, then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of the water. Previous trumpet plague hit the oceans. This seems to affect the fresh water. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water because it was made bitter. I might call on Mr. Tanner to comment on this a little bit later, because I think you had a nice message in a sermon some years back about wormwood. But it says this is a great star, and so we'll come back, and if you want to comment, then I'd like to have you comment on, because I know you did a lot of research on this, Mr. Tannert, put you on the spot, didn't discuss this with him beforehand, but maybe you'll remember. Anyway, but before we get to that, I want to consolidate that with something else, so let's move on from that and go to verse 12. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the signs. So the third of them were darkened, a third of the day did not shine, likewise the night. So that's going to be spooky. That's going to be crazy. And I looked and heard as an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound. So I'll begin chapter 9 by commenting on the word star, and then if Mr. Tannert is ready to make his comment about wormwood, then we'll go to that. If not, we're all going to be greatly disappointed. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. So we've got a third of the daytime being blotted out with a heavenly, with a plague. Then you've got this fifth angel sounding, and there's a star falling from heaven. So who is the star here? Who is the star in Wormwood? And who is the he in verse 2 of this particular chapter? He opened the bottomless pit, this star, in other words. So let's get to that and let the Bible interpret what it is, because we see that there is a star fallen from heaven. Now, let me urge some caution. This star could have already fallen from heaven. It didn't necessarily happen instantaneously right then. It's just the angel, or that John is commenting on the fact that this star had fallen from heaven. Okay, so what is the star? In Job, let's see if we got. Okay, yeah, let's see. Okay, that's just the verse. Okay, in Job 38 and verse 7, it says, when this morning star sang together, we know this is the angelic realm, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. This is before the rebellion of the devil, okay? And then in Revelation 1 and verse 16, we see that he had in his right hand seven stars. Out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword, and his countenance was like the sun shining in its strength. And then that is further revealed in Revelation 1 and verse 20, the mystery of the seven stars which you saw in my night, in my right hand, and the seven golden lampstands. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven lampstands which you saw are the seven churches. So this shows us that in some cases, the word star is used to represent angel. But these are not righteous angels, the one fallen and the one of Wormwood. These cannot be righteous angels. They have fallen. Jude 1 and verse 6 says, the angels who did not keep their proper domain. Why did they not keep it? Because they rebelled with the devil, but left their own abode. They left the responsibility that God had given to them, and they rebelled with Satan the devil. Revelation 12 will later on show us that the devil drew with his tail a third of all of the angelic realm. He has reserved an everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. They're further described by Jude in verse 13 as raging waves of the sea, foaming up their own shame, wandering stars, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. That's death. The blackness of darkness forever. That is, in my view, that is their fate. Now, Revelation 12 and verse 4 is the scripture that I had noted. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth to devour a child as soon as it was born. So the fifth angel sounds, there's a star fallen from heaven. He's given the key to the bottomless pit, and he opens it, and this horrendous smoke comes out of the pit. And so this causes a devastation. Now, what we see happening is that God is allowing these things to happen. He's like the master of four-dimensional chess, right? Knows how these horrid, rebellious, angelic beings are going to react, and he allows them to do his purpose. Now, I apologize, Mr. Tanner, put you on the spot on the Wormwood thing, but do you have a comment you'd like to add?
Yes, if I am on. Okay, anyway, Wormwood really refers to bitter, like bitterness, and I think when I put that message together, I kind of put out a proposal that this was actually Satan coming down and muddying the waters. Waters referring to the whole world, basically. And people would drink of his doctrine and die from it, which is kind of again, it's all symbolic, and that's for sure. And the only other comment I'd have is that when you look at the seven trumpets here, it's only about one-third of, it's kind of a, it's a lot of dangerous, but it's, God's only doing one-third of everything. When you get down to the seven last holes of judgments, it's full force. Just a thought.
That's what I'd remembered, and I appreciate it. I don't want to take your, I really felt like that was a great message when you gave it, and I meant to talk to you about that beforehand, but your recall is perfect. And so, yes, this is just another devastating plague, and it's Satan and his minions who are orchestrating a lot of this. Now, it says in verse 4, they were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God in their foreheads. So again, we see how important the sealing of God and what it represents in the Holy Spirit from the previous chapter, chapter 7. So there are limitations that are placed on these angels. They're not allowed to just kill, but in this sense, they're allowed to torment, which is tantamount to, you know, maybe something worse. And they were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. And that's what the demonic realm loves to do, right? Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. So what could this be? Well, you don't have to have much of an imagination these days to know that we have the capability, man has the capability to unleash all kinds of biological torment, biological weapons, radiation poisoning. It could be a lot of those things. It says in verse 6, in those days men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die, and death will flee from them. So something that happens and goes on for months and months and months would be a horrible plague where, you know, and then we're talking about war as well throughout all of this. So it says, the shape of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were crowns of something like gold, and their faces were like the faces of men. So what could that be? Well, you again, in the day and age of John, then he had never seen the weapons of modern warfare, but we know what they're like. We know how incredibly powerful they are. We've had two neighbors in our neighborhood who were A-10 pilots. One of them was our next-door neighbor, Mike, who is an A-10 pilot with the Air Force. And one day, we were talking across the fence, and he said, have you ever seen one of the shells that we shoot? And it's basically a Gatling gun. You know, the A-10 is a Gatling gun, not a Gatlin gun, but a Gatling, couldn't resist, invented by one of your ancestors, right? Gatling gun, it's basically a cannon with a shell that is tipped with, uranium? Depleted uranium, right? And they're about that long. They're massive. And I said, Mike, how fast do those things come out of there? And he says, I said, how many can you fire in a minute? And he says, I don't know. Let's see, it's calculated. He says, it's 80 per second. I said, what? 80 per second of these shells coming down. And so there's even bigger planes that have some of the same type of Gatling guns that when you go into combat, I mean, they've got three or four of them on some of these planes. They're like the size of bombers that are just take out everything. So this is just an Apache helicopter. I think it's an Apache helicopter, which may have been what John saw in vision, right? The weapons of modern warfare as mankind is being led. Verse 8, they had hair like women's hair. Their teeth were like lion's teeth, and they had breastplates like breastplates of iron. And the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots with many horses running into battle. So, you know, that could be jet airplanes. That could be even the propeller pet airplanes. That could be tanks. It could be the modern munitions that have, the destructive capability. They had tails like scorpions or stings in their tails. Their power was to hurt men 5 months. So What we've uncovered in this incredible series of events in the last year in Ukraine is that we know that, unfortunately, the Wuhan lab wasn't the only place where biotech research was being conducted by the U.S. government. Yeah, that's right. It was funded by the U.S. government. We funded dozens of biolabs in Ukraine. That's why they want to keep things hush-hush. You look it up. I mean, you can look it up, but this is what they're finding. And this is like one of the craziest things to understand, that our government has been responsible for doing these things around the globe. It's hard to take. It really is hard to take when you've been proud to be an American, but to understand that this has been going on for such a long time, and many other things that have been covertly sponsored by, well, the three-letter organizations that we're all familiar with. But enough of that. The end result is this is all coming to a conclusion, and in these chapters, 8 through 11, shows God's intervention. So, verse 11, they had as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, who in Hebrew the name is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon. So this is the destroyer, this is the headman himself, this is Satan, the devil. Now, in Revelation 17 and verse 8, it says, the beast that you saw was and is not and will ascend out of the bottomless pit. So this is what is happening, this going back to the fifth angel in the bottomless pit. This is the rise of the beast power. And it happens over a period of time, right? But it ends up in this conclusion, this destructive conclusion that we see wrapped up in this particular chapter. Those who dwell on the earth will marvel, and that will happen, that marveling thing will happen before all of this last final destruction, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. So going back to verse, I don't know if I put that scripture on there, I guess I didn't. Okay, go back to the scorpion. In verse 12, one woe is past, behold, still two more woes are coming after these. Now, if you want to have some fun, go to YouTube, if you're familiar with how YouTube works, and type in angel at the Euphrates. And unfortunately, there are some misguided zealots who think that the drying up of the Euphrates River is the fulfillment of this prophecy happening now. And they're uncovering areas of excavation that they think that is where this is all going to happen. So it's kind of funny, but it's misguided. But this is not happening at this particular time. But in verse 13, we read about the sixth trumpet. Then the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before the God, saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. So these again are angelic beings which are demonic. They're up in the upper echelon, apparently, of the demonic realm. Because the righteous angels of God are not bound. They're not bound until a certain time, but these angels will be bound until a certain time, and they have a specific purpose, which says in verse 16, the four angels who had been prepared for the hour and the day and the month and the year were released to kill a third of mankind. So we'd already had, I think Mr. Horchak covered this in Revelation 6, there's already a third of mankind killed there, right? So when you got another third killed in this particular time, and they're killed through the auspices of this particular angel and an army of horsemen of 200 million. So does that include all of Russia and China and the Far East and the many nations and nationalities coming across? Very likely. The four angels who had been kept ready to this very hour are released to kill a third of mankind. And John then mentions this 200 million man army. So this event, the second woe, or the sixth trumpet plague, seems to be a massive counterattack in the future against the United States of Europe, which we haven't really even spoken that much of yet in this series, but when we get into Revelation 13, then we definitely will be. So this is a preview of that, but it seems to be in response to that domination that will take place. Now, in today's world, it's very difficult for anybody to see how Europe can rise and be powerful. Europe is weaker right now than the United States, much weaker. Europe is so weak that even though they're kind of giving a quiet little golf clap to the United States intervention in the Ukraine and us giving all the money and everything and all of that, they're kind of, yeah, that's great. You know, attack the Soviet Union. Yeah, we hate them too. You know, did everybody see what happened in the last week with this dam in Ukraine being blown up? Anybody see that in the news, this massive flooding that took place? And then you read the news reports of what the government is saying happened is that the Russians blew up the dam that would impede Crimea, which they control, which is crazy nonsense. You know, they don't have any actual proof, but it's hard to believe some of the things that you read on the news. Like months ago, it was the Russians bombed Poland, but they later found out it was Ukrainian rockets that bombed Poland, but then the Russians somehow did it themselves. I mean, it's fantasy land. It's crazy. That's why I tell people, don't watch the news. I mean, don't watch, even Fox is crazy now. I mean, it's dump Tucker and, you know, it's just crazy. Anyway, you can't believe what they're saying. You cannot believe any of the narrative that they're foisting off and expecting you to believe. Like the Russians bombed their own pipeline, caused this one of the greatest catastrophes ever with the bombing of their natural gas pipe. Well, why would they do that? They didn't. Now that came out, Seymour Hersh, not a conservative journalist by any means, former columnist for New York Times. Basically, the United States blew up the stupid pipeline with the help of Norway, with our own divers, contractors trained in Panama, Florida. On and on it goes. But at any rate, this is a fragment of what is going to happen in the future. So in verse 17, we read, "And thus I saw the horses in the vision. Those who sat on them had breastplates of fiery red, hyacinth blue, sulfur yellow. And the heads of the horses were like the heads of lions, and out of their mouths came fire, smoke, and brimstone." Obviously, tanks, weaponry of some kind, machinery. "By these plagues, a third of mankind was killed, by the fire, the smoke, and the brimstone which came out of their mouths. For their power is in their mouth and in their tails, and their tails are like serpents having heads, and with them they do harm." So this modern warfare, killing a third of mankind, but the rest of mankind who were not killed by these plagues did not repent of the works of their hands, that they should not worship demons and idols of gold, silver, brass, stone, wood, which can neither see nor hear nor walk. And they did not repent of their murders or their sorceries or their sexual immorality or their thefts. So we've got a titanic war, world war, that is described in chapter 9. And it's the background for all the remaining punishments that will happen in the book of Revelation. So when we go through chapter 10, which I'm going to leave for Mr. Horchak, next time, chapter 10 and chapter 11, keep in mind that this is the backdrop of these chapters coming up, these remaining trumpet plagues. Revelation shows the final battle is at the end of all of this conflict, which is going to be directed at Jesus Christ at his return. And so we'll get into that. I'm sure Mr. Horchak will get into that. But amazingly, mankind can get so deceived by the devil that no matter what, there's no repentance. And then finally, God will reveal himself. So we'll leave it at that for now. I'll open up to any questions or comments. It's really pretty basic, but it's horrific to contemplate. Okay, comments? Anyone? Questions? Yes, Sheila. Wait till you get to your microphone there, Sheila. Thanks.
I have a question between verse 7, where it says the first angel sounded, and the end
which,
of it...
Which chapter are you in, Sheila?
8.
Okay.
That we just read. 8, verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there was mingled with blood. But this part, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. But then, on the next page, on chapter 9, in verse 4, the fifth angel sounded, and in chapter 4 it says, they were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth, or any green thing, or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. So is it the timing is different, I know, between these two, but how?
Yeah, good question. I take it as no more will be allowed to be, you know, destroyed at that time. Because basically, I mean, you've got a third of the vegetation being harmed in Revelation 8 and verse 7. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have some left for there to be any continuing human life. And for even the process of oxygen to be created. So I guess what it's saying to us is that God says, okay, no more can be done. Okay, so it's finished. So in 9, they're commanded not to do any more harm to the grass of the earth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, except that it says all the green grass was burned up in verse 7. Of 8.
Well, I think it means it may not be exact, but I think it's a third of all that is remaining, not all the green grass, but I don't know, it's worded a little differently, and I don't know if any other translations bring that out, but that would be my guess. I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer. I'll look it up for you. And yes, Patrick?
I believe that when you burn grass, there's a time passage here, but when you burn grass, it makes it grow back better and quicker.
That could be. I mean,
if I'm not mistaken, I don't know.
It could. Yeah, I mean, it could be the passage of time, but we'll throw that. Well, that's a good question, Sheila. Well, my best instinct is that a third of it's burned up in the first go-round in chapter 8, and then two-thirds remain, and then God says, okay, no more. But yeah, Pat could be right, too. And maybe one of those indistinct things, but good comment. Okay, anybody else? Okay, ready. Thanks for coming. Thanks for staying. Appreciate your patience, and we will see you next week.